I'm Gwen Douglas. This is Juice Podcast. And
I'm Emily Harmon. Welcome to Juice Podcast.
Today we're talking about
natural wine. Yeah. So we were asked by quite a few of our listeners. It's a little bit of a minefield trying to navigate your way through natural wine, even just down to the definition and understanding what that means, particularly here in Berlin. The natural wine scene, it's almost like Copenhagen, where every restaurant has a natural wine list. So there's a lot of people confused.
Right. And I think justifiably so. I think if you're coming from a conventional wine background, or the only wine you know is the stuff that your parents were drinking or what you've been drinking for the last little while, it can be really confusing. So what is natural wine as we know it?
So it's interesting. So I think I kind of follow the Alice Faring definition of what is natural wine, because I kind of see her as the goddess of natural wine, or at least the goddess communicator of natural wine. So it will be from grapes that have been are usually from the producer's own vineyards, but not exclusively, but from vineyards where they haven't seen chemicals, so there's no use of chemical fertilizers, fungicides, pesticides.
So organic in some sense, or in 100%.
Yeah, I mean, usually it's more than organic, because actually, legally, when you're organic, you can use a number of chemicals still
Absolutely.
In your vineyard. So it's kind of a bit of a mixed. It's kind of it's not always as clear as we think it's going to be.
Rather than an actual like term of production, it's more like an ethic that maybe producers are working with.
Yeah, because there's no legal definition of natural wine. So where with organic wine and biodynamic wine, in different parts of the world, there are different definitions and different legal meanings of what that can entail. So legally, being organic, you can have you can be organically certified. However, you can use copper in your vineyard.
Okay.
Whereas a lot of producers might query whether the use of copper is actually good for the soil health long term if you use excess of it. Yeah,
I guess copper is used a lot in a lot of different purposes outside of even.
But I think it's one of those things where, like, if you use it, you know, on a small scale, within reason, it's fine. But like, if you're overdoing it, then the soils can become toxic.
I mean, I only know about the copper recently because I was looking up some anti-wrinkle pillows.
What, and they have copper inside?
Yeah,
oh,
like
really?
Silk made with copper. Yeah.
So we should all be rubbing like little pennies on our faces before we go to bed.
Get
maybe.
Ready. I'm gonna have like some sort of like penny chainmail.
Well, I think also there's that old wives' tale, which I'm sure more than one person has told me. If you have a sty, you can use copper to help heal it. But a copper penny, rub a penny on your sty.
Well, that's actually very interesting.
But anyway, so back to what is biodynamic wine. So biodynamic wine, what is natural wine?
But actually that's maybe a good lead into the next topic.
So biodynamic wine, I guess the next stage on from organic wine, which is using the principles of Rudolf Steiner, who was the creator of biodynamics, not necessarily for the vineyard initially, but for farming in general. So that's working with the cycles of the moon and the sun, so the planet, so taking consideration like the gravitational pull when the moon is closer and when it's apart, that there'll be certain days that are better.
I love the idea of biodynamics, because it works, but it makes no sense in terms of like the universe has this like defies logic in many ways, and I really love these systems that just work.
Yeah,
and sometimes it's great to feel like we are little pawns in a giant universe.
Well, you just have to spend a day at the beach and you realize that.
Absolutely. No, I love it. But I think it's great because I think with biodynamics, people get really confused about cow horns filled with dung and all of this kind of stuff. They think it's really new age, but I think that the vineyards speak for themselves.
I think those who are being cynical call it new age, and I have in the past maybe also understood that, but because it's very like you feel like maybe you'd be talking to somebody at Glastonbury Festival about biodynamic farming.
But the proof is in the pudding. I think a lot of these vineyards are super healthy, and you see that there's like an ecosystem that's at work, whereas I think in a lot of industrial vineyards you don't see flowers and life happening around
the vineyard. Yeah, and it's something that's very relevant for today, because I think more and more when you go to food symposiums or you listen to different speakers at food symposiums, depending whether they come from the chef world or they come from a farming world or they come from a vine growing world or a winemaking world, Everybody now is communicating about the importance of small-scale farming,
right.
And biodynamics is something that really embraces that, because of course you can do it at a bigger scale, but actually the human factor is very important.
I think it is, absolutely.
And actually agriculturally looking after our soils is more important than ever, because actually we have the poorest soils than we've ever had, because
sure.
They're polluted and they've been neglected. And they've been abused.
We just, pulled too much out of them, yeah. We've abused these soils. We haven't, given them life back. And we forget that an ecosystem is what helps drive everything. If everything is in balance, then that one thing you're trying to grow.
Data that we do have is not communicated enough. As the communication of this data, the scientific data we have of chemical farming and the danger of it. Like, I was listening to a podcast recently, the Goop podcast.
Yeah, I was just talking about...
Which was fascinating, and it was so interesting about, Roundup, the use of Roundup.
Yeah,
so for a long time, I know that vineyards have had Roundup used on them. The Roundup ends up in the wine, so we end up consuming it, and that ends up in our bodies.
Yeah.
And I found that really fascinating, that last episode on Goop that I'd listened to, where it talked about how basically by consuming things like Roundup, you're actually changing your own DNA and the future DNA.
I mean,
and you're reducing.
We could get really
crazy.
Heavy with this shit.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, in pharmacology across the board, our DNA has been changed by a lot of major medications.
I found it absolutely shocking. The sperm count and fertility rates are going down and down and down and down, and that's directly linked with what we're consuming.
I mean,
that's absolutely mad.
Part of me is kind of fascinated by this, because I sometimes think, is this Darwinism in practice? Have we created this? Maybe it's also necessary.
Yeah.
That would be the other way to look at it, is that nature has a funny way of finding balance, even when we don't see it. So let's keep our sperm counts high and our wine glasses full.
Of natural wine.
the way to go is definitely to, take care of our soil and make good fruit.
So going back to that definition of what natural wine is, so... obviously it has to come from high quality grapes, which means not using those chemicals. Yeah, at least I think without the use of chemicals in the vineyard. And then those high quality grapes that have come into the wine cellar, the winemaker then obviously has a number of different choices that they can make. So it's very, very common, even when you see an organic wine on the shelf, in supermarkets.
Because like I said earlier, we were discussing what to talk about, and I said my first experience with a lot of quote-unquote natural wines was probably what was being sold to me in sort of bio markets or organic supermarkets.
Yep.
And a lot of it is not that great, because their selling point is that it's just organic. I mean, so the fruit is grown organically, but I don't know what happens to the grape beyond that.
Exactly, and
so
this is actually very common that you could see that these... You know, particularly in sort of South America, there are big producers where it's very easy to farm organically because the climate's perfect for it.
Right, exactly.
And then, of course, all of the grapes get into the cellar, and then the way in which the wines are made is very different. So that could just be by adding, synthetic or cultivated yeasts to manipulate the flavour or to control the fermentation process. That's kind of like best case scenario, just adding yeast.
Yeah, because I was going to say, are there producers making, say... wines out of organically farmed grapes that are then wood chipping and doing big box style? Does that exist?
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it does, because I'm less informed on that very industrial side of
things. I mean, I'm imagining
in
the Americas or in some of the places where things just grow abundantly, that there is a possibility to grow organic grapes and then still produce wines big box style.
Yes, I mean, you do. I mean, the short answer is we still see bag and box wines made from big cooperatives that are saying that they're organic, and you can taste that the wines are still industrially made.
Right.
So I think, one, there's the addition of yeast to manipulate flavour, control the fermentation process. Then there is a number of different things that could also be added, enzymes, different things to help control the way in which the wine ferments. It could be things are added that can help reduce the alcohol, things that you can add, obviously the basic thing of adding sugar to increase the alcohol, adding acid, de-acidifying, all of these different things. And there are,
numerous amounts of things.
Yeah, and when we talk about winemaking, I think we've got over 100 different additives that you can add that are chemicals. And that's not again, this is also not a new thing. Early 90s, like before World War One, it was quite common to have these wines produced in the natural wine way. So just going because back to that definition of natural wine, so farming without chemicals, not adding yeast, not deacidifying,
whatever was natural in there, taking naturally existing yeasts, not putting pesticides.
Yeah, because grapes, and then, everybody needs to remember that grapes ferment. They have an abundance. If you're not chemically farming, you're not destroying that natural yeast layer on the outside of the grape, which means that when you go to make the wine, the you've got this strong yeast culture, which then you can ferment the wine.
And what grows together goes together. So whatever's happening generally can be good for what's happening in the cellar.
Totally. So then we've got that, and then we've got, like, just going back before we go into the history of things a little bit more, just so everybody's on the same page, because I know we're sort of getting further along in the definition and not really making it to the end. That famous saying of nothing added, nothing taken away, which is really important. So the wines are usually unfined and unfiltered, so sometimes can appear cloudy.
Right.
However, unfiltered and unfined wines also can be clear. So that depends what the winemaker's done in the cellar, how long they've kept the wine in the cellar, that it can naturally settle. And I had that question recently at a wine training. They're like, why is it not cloudy if it's unfiltered? And I was like, oh, well, that's a really good question, actually, producing the wine. So that's one thing. And then when we get to the bottling process, I mean, the big question is about sulfur dioxide. So, of course, everybody thinks sulfur's evil, and
this is actually, like, for a lot of, say, my friends that are not necessarily, like, into wine, sulfur becomes the big question. And I get annoyed, because I think that historically a little bit of sulfur has been used to make it transportable.
Yes.
And I think that sometimes, depending on what wine, I mean, you can tell me if I'm wrong, that a little bit sometimes needs to be used to just keep it stable.
Yes.
And it's going to be a choice based on what the wine is like. Some wines can go without sulfur. Some need a little bit, otherwise it's a hot mess.
Mm.
But I'm going to let you answer that.
The super purist probably would say zero sulfur. I think a small amount of sulfur at bottling is fine. And Alice Faring also says low or no.
Yeah, right.
So a very small amount, and everybody judges that slightly differently. So a little bit of sulfur sometimes is not a bad thing. We have to also remember sulfur's not the enemy here.
No, I also don't think so.
Sulfur is an antioxidant, and it's also an antibacterial. So it stops the wine from oxidizing, so it protects the wine from oxygen and spoiling, but it also kills a lot of germs. When used moderately, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
I mean, I want to remind people, especially people that enjoy health food, that there's a ton of sulfur in dried nuts, dried fruit.
More than any bottled wine as well.
So this is sort of like something that annoys me when someone says, oh, but there's sulfur added. And it's like, man, I just saw you mow down on like a whole bag of like dried apricots or dried nuts. And it's like, I think people become hyper aware of one product because people want to talk about it, but no one talks about the sulfur in other foods.
And unfortunately, there have been people communicating that sulfur is the most important thing, and actually it's not.
It's not. I agree.
It's not, because actually for me, I would prefer to...
The farming for me is important.
Yeah, I would prefer to have something that's been grown at the very minimum organically in the vineyard.
I agree.
That has less impact on our environment and our soil and our water.
I absolutely 100% agree.
Then what's manipulated in the cellar? I always choose wines based on the quality of the wines. 99% of the time, they're from vineyards that are the very minimum organic, because the quality of the fruit has to be there to make the quality of the wine.
It's the beginning of the product.
Yes.
You know, you can't make a good product without an initial product.
The biggest thing that I've heard is, I'm allergic to sulfur. Which I think
want to punch people. I'm sorry. I would love to see you eating that granola bar. Or any of the products that you buy at the supermarket, because sulfur is an agent that's used to stabilize a lot of products. But I think that there are so many things that people just like pinpoint on, and they just want to be a little bit...
But the sulfur thing, I think, as well, it's interesting because... Yeah, because I've seen it, and I have. I have friends that, like, when they're drinking wine, they get sort of like red blotches sort of coming up on the face and the neck.
And it's not just a histamine reaction?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Often it is. So nine times out of ten, I say to people that come into restaurants or talk to me about their reaction to wine, I say, just take an antihistamine or Claritin.
Yes.
And then drink some wine and see if it changes anything. Because I also wonder, because drinking natural wines, because they're unfined and unfiltered, sometimes, I don't know for sure, but like, they might not necessarily have less histamine.
No, actually,
either.
They might have more.
Yeah, so it's quite an interesting thing.
Product. Yeah, but I think this too, because I think a lot of times people say, well, I get a reaction. I think, you know, there are more histamines in like the heavier red wines. So I usually tell friends to steer towards lighter red wines.
Which
or
would
white
suit
wines.
The natural wine movement a bit more, because right. I do steer on freshness.
But then it's sort of like, yeah, I mean, it might have nothing to do with sulfur or any of the stuff. It could be your hereditary background. It could be all kinds of things that bring up flushes. You just might be allergic to booze. It might not just be sulfur. You might be shit out of luck.
People say wine makes itself. And I find that quite interesting, because they go, oh, everything you need to make wine is in the berry, which is correct. However, if you just left grapes on the plant and you didn't pick them,
it would be a
hot mess. Oh, no, you just wouldn't have wine. Like, wine is a man-made thing. Like, there is a symbiosis.
It's the same as saying, like, apple juice makes itself. You don't just put, like, apples on a tree and be like, I'm going to have a glass of juice tomorrow. Like, it's not going to, like, juice itself, filter itself, or orange juice. Most people don't like orange juice with pulp.
Yeah.
So someone has to squish it and filter out the pulpy bits.
Yeah. So I think that's absolute madness. It's not, wine is something that is made by people.
It's not honey. Like, this, yeah. We are the bees. We are the honeybees.
Yes.
We have to turn it into something.
Yes, 100%.
We are the honeybees of wine. What is the difference between, then, natural and biodynamic?
The biodynamics is following along the path of Rudolf Steiner's principles. So working with the lunar cycles of the Earth.
Right.
So the gravitational pull, the influence of that on plants, on humans. And that's something that I have acknowledged in, there are certain days or certain times of the year and certain times of the lunar cycle where you do, like, and also atmospheric pressure has another thing to
that's
do with it all
very
as well. You know, we're humans, like, we know, like, if it's humid and it feels very heavy outside, we feel a really different feeling to when it's like, when it's not humid and it feels light and
especially
it feels bright.
Those,
and
those of us that get headaches, atmospheric pressure can be, if we're sensitive to that kind of stuff.
It's working with the cycles of the Earth. And it's a little bit like, I guess, this is something that's almost medieval, actually. It's Rudolf Steiner put it into words, but actually it was something that existed far beyond him. When you read about, like, feudal systems and how they farmed and what they farmed, and again, it goes back to the small-scale farming and working on fixing certain things and certain nutrients in the soil.
Because I think a lot of us have watched these documentaries where there's this, like, cow horn filled with dung and some other it up again, because I think there's some interesting things that we see and we don't quite understand.
There's that side of it. There's also learning that there's particular times of the month that you'll do certain things because of this gravitational pull. And then, yeah, like you said before about these cow horns, so Formula 500, 501... so one is that you'd be making your own compost, which of course is great, because compost is great. We want worms, we want soil life, we want the microbiome to be as healthy as possible. As everybody knows, it's really important. So we would be compacting compost into a cow's horn and then burying that in the ground. And then apparently, like, you'd only bury so many of them over a square meter.
It's just a way to adding life.
Apparently, yeah. Like, apparently you don't need to add very many of these horns. So it's interesting, because this came up recently at a vegan restaurant I was at. And then there was, a customer that was saying, well, if they're using that cow horn, it's not, like, it's an animal product. Is it vegan or not?
But did the cow die by a man's
hand? Again, I don't...
Did it die naturally?
Yeah, I mean, it's another question
altogether. I mean, that would be the case of it being vegan or not, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Everyone draws a different line in this thing.
And then there are things like tea tinctures, different things like that. So a homeopathic approach to treating the vineyards, really.
Cool. Very interesting. How do we bring it back to the consumer? This idea of, like, so now we know a little bit of, like, what natural is and what biodynamic is. Then what do people ask for, I guess? Can you see these wines on a menu? Is there a difference? Are they going to be listed exactly the same? How do you ask for a natural wine in a restaurant?
Yeah,
if you're new to this.
I think it's still really difficult. I mean, luckily now there is an app called Raisin.
Yeah.
which has a list of some natural wine places, although it's not, I don't think it's so up to date. Like, I've tried to add places into the app.
I've done the same.
And it doesn't accept them, and it's really annoying. So it's like, it's completely not up to date. It's a bit out of date with multiple cities, but that's a good starting point of ideas right. of places to find them. Googling, like, natural wines, finding them on Instagram.
And I think that, I'm guessing from what I'm seeing is that most places that, if they're trying to attract people that are into natural wines, they're making a list that is nature.
Yeah.
Nature wines. I mean, we had it the
other day. It'll be on their website usually.
I mean, we had it the other day at a pizzeria here in Berlin where they have a conventional wine list, and then on the specials menu, they have two natural wines. So then they're like in a little box, natural wines.
Yeah.
And it says nature on it.
And good independent wine shops are the best place to learn for most of the things you want to learn about wines. You just need to go in there, talk to them. Have you got any natural wines? Yeah, okay, with this, blah, blah, blah. And then you know, you can sort of follow the guidance of staff there and take it from there.
And I would also say that understanding that all natural wines are not made the same.
Yes.
That every winemaker's choice, because he's like an artist deciding what he wants to use, paintbrushes or palettes or scalpels or whatever. He's making his wine however he wants in his natural way.
And remember that vintage to vintage also varies much more because using wild yeast or not using selected yeast that are giving the exact same fermentation, the exact same flavours every year. So from year to year, the wine might change, but that's also part of the joy of it.
Yeah,
that's also the part of life. Like, every day is different in life. Like, every day you wake up, you feel different.
More exciting, I think, to try vintages than when you know it's going to be completely different.
And from good producers of natural wine, like, even though there are vintage variations, the wines are still well made, right? So you shouldn't, hopefully, when you navigate and you find yourself in the right place, we're still struggling because there are a lot of terribly made natural wines that are awful and undrinkable. And everybody goes, and you go to a natural wine bar and they go, oh, this is how the wine's supposed to be. And you're like, actually,
I think this is a horrible accident.
Yeah, or sommeliers that don't know, okay, this wine shouldn't taste like rotting whatever. It shouldn't taste like it's like something that's gone off. It shouldn't taste like vinegar.
But I think that in this sense, maybe this is what's exciting about natural wine, because maybe actually it makes people actually use their palates instead of having to trust what everyone is telling you. It really comes down to, do you love it? Do you love it? Not what people are telling you. What do you think?
Yeah.
Do you enjoy drinking it? Do you enjoy sharing it with your friends? Maybe in the end, this is a way for everyone, like an equalizer. You can go in and try something and say, like, I really like this.
Yeah, and you should also be able to say, if you feel you're in a place and the wine doesn't taste right and somebody goes, this is just how the wine is, you should also feel okay to go, well, I really don't like this wine. Please give me something else instead.
Yes.
That's really important, because I think that's something I'm infuriated with sommeliers at the moment.
This is one of the greatest lessons you've taught me, Emily, actually, is to sometimes say, because I'm an absolute people pleaser, and I'm too shy sometimes to send something back when I know it's awful because I don't want to embarrass anybody. And you're right. If I don't like it, it's okay to say, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Send it back.
Do not sit there and drink the glass of wine that you do not enjoy. Do not allow a sommelier to shame you into drinking that glass because you're told you know less.
Yeah,
and I think that's really important, because I know from working in the fucking restaurant, so I've been self-employed now for just over 4 years, but before that, 10 years working in restaurants, a whole decade. Your job, when you work in a restaurant, whether you're a waiter, whether you're a KP, whether you're a chef, whether you're a sommelier, whether you're the general manager, doesn't matter if you're the bottom of the chain, the top of the chain, your job is to create the best experience, to look after people, and make them feel amazing. That's why people go out to restaurants.
Yes, absolutely. Otherwise, you need it home and then get your boyfriend to yell at you.
And if, and if you go out and somebody makes you feel uncomfortable and makes you feel forced to drink something you don't enjoy, if they don't take back a dish that you think is not correct, like, as far as I'm concerned, these are places you should never return to. And
I'm
you should not
you.
Give Keep your money to. So find the places where people are willing to give you the right experience. It's really important.
I'm down with that.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our little chat about natural wine.
Yeah, we got into quite a long chat about it.
We got into it, I know. We really got into it. No, I think it's good, because I think it's like a topic of the moment. I think a lot of people have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
I'd be curious if anyone has more questions. You can find us at juice.podcast on Instagram.
Juice_podcast on Twitter.
You can find our website at juice.show. Please send us any and all questions. We'd love to hear if we haven't covered anything. And otherwise, we hope that you are fierce and fearless in your exploration of natural wine, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Emily.